Files Radio.
Exploring feminism and technology through space and time.
Listening to F Files Radio on CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm in today with an episode that has an interview I did with a friend of mine who's involved with the encampment that is currently taking place on McGill campus. The encampment was erected this past Saturday, April 27th. And is still going today on Wednesday, May 1st. This interview was taken on Monday. And we're at the sides of the encampment. The interview itself is kind of chopped up and screwed. And there's a moment where we're passing the mic between each other. And then another moment where I set the mic down, but we're still talking. And I decided to include both parts of the interview in this episode because I think it really gives a sense of what it's like to be on the encampment right now. I'll be playing tracks from audio captured at the encampment of students who've been gathered, students and community members who've been gathered around for the past few days without stop, showing up in support. The encampment is organized by a coalition of students, both from McGill University and Concordia. You can follow Solidarity for Palestinian Human Rights, or SPHR McGill, for more information and updates about the encampment on social media. On there, they also are very clear in what their demands are and reason for the encampment to disclose and divest, asking that these universities disclose with transparency all investments in companies complicit in the genocide of the Palestinian people, to divest from all complicit companies and cut all academic ties from Israeli institutions, to defend their student population and their right to enact peaceful protest and speak up, and to declare immediate condemning of the ongoing genocide against the Palestinian people, and calling on the Canadian government to immediately cease all military contracts with the Zionist state. People have been camping out to show solidarity for the Palestinian people, but also to demand action. And I'll leave it for the interview to kind of paint more of a picture of what's happening.
The best of the best.
Honestly, so tired. I only slept 5 hours.
You've only slept 5 hours?
In the past 2 days.
Okay.
But I feel...
What?
I feel okay. I was like journaling, trying to reground myself.
True.
Yeah.
Do you want to step to the side and chat for a little bit?
Literally,
you want to go this way?
So, can you start by talking about the setup?
Totally. The setup has been... Well, the setup itself was very fluid. Like, camps were set up very quickly on the first day. And on the second day, the amount of people and the amount of tents had tripled. Like, it went very quickly. Luckily, like, there's been well, not luck, yeah, whatever. Luckily, there's been like this beautiful overpouring of like resources and food from all over the city and from such a huge amount of people. Yeah, to a point where we had to stop accepting food because there's so much. But yeah, and it, you know, the first day it was like raining a bit, so it was like setting up tarps. But yeah, very quickly it felt like a little city there. Yeah, I think what's really amazing is that the students on the campus like represent a coalition of universities. But I think that the specificity of McGill has to do with the amount of investment. I think it's like something like $20 million that they have in investments towards companies that profit off of the apartheid settler state of Israel. And I think there's like this, I think Montreal itself has like this really beautiful legacy of like student organizing, specifically in regards to the tuition strikes in 2012, in 2015, I think as well. And I think it really shows in terms of how people have like, again, like flooded so quickly. And also I think that what's significant about the encampment is that somebody said that earlier, like it gave people the opportunity to act in a way that, like, of course, there were so many different opportunities to act. There have been for months in terms of like attending protests or direct actions. But the simple, like the simplicity of literally just setting up a tent and sleeping there, and the kind of like, I don't know, it's almost like the, I want to talk about the body. I think I want to talk about like the, like people's bodies, like the fact that we can just like use our bodies in a very active way to pressure this university. And I think it's also in the hopes of like having, in the hopes of having McGill divest from those companies, and then obviously that creating like a ripple effect in regards to the other universities here in Montreal and also in Canada.
Yeah, I think it's really powerful to talk about presence, and that is what this encampment is a physical presence in order to put pressure. And I was wondering if you could speak a little bit about what the response from McGill has been thus far, as well as the response from any sort of police or security presence.
Yeah, so in regards to the response from McGill, they first announced over the weekend that they would accept the encampment as long as it remained peaceful. And so today, as of Monday, they have announced that they might serve an injunction, or will serve an injunction. It might happen tomorrow or the following day, but very soon.
Yes.
So police presence has been incredibly minimal since the beginning. Yeah, very minimal. There's a lot of security guards, McGill security guards, but they don't have a lot of authority over the encampment. But yeah, so the police presence has been very minimal, and I think we are, you know, simply expecting it to accelerate very quickly, and to be forceful when the decision is made to attempt to expel us.
Yeah, I know that right now you guys are on the field that McGill actually hosts its graduation ceremonies, and that, you know, later in May they will be erecting a tent for their graduation ceremonies, which is exactly where the encampment is right now. So I'm really curious to see if that timeline affects their response, and also the way that they deal with the mass of people. And I wonder if that's also been a conversation that's happening around the people who have been sleeping here and been present and organizing.
Yeah, totally. I think it's quite, I think the placement, the location of the camp is quite strategic, knowing that the commencement ceremony will be at the end of the month. And yeah, I think that the hope is that by being an obstacle to that ceremony, it will obviously, it will like impose more pressure on the administration. Yeah, because, you know, universities, institutions are also corporations and are very concerned about their image and their reputation, and having camp in the place of their graduation ceremony is significant in terms of their image and in terms of their, yeah, in terms of their reputation. So I think the hopes is that it's kind of like another bâton dans les roues, like an obstacle basically for them.
I wanted to ask you about your personal motivation for joining in this coalition and, you know, anything that you might have heard from other people that in terms of their motivation for being present in this encampment effort.
Yeah, in terms of my personal motivation, it's really, you know, fueled by a sense of really intense devastation, like witnessing the genocide in the past few months and being feeling very powerless in being able to enact any type of concrete change. And I think that I was very drawn to this idea, not only because of the kind of power of it and the symbolism of it, but also because of the collectivity of it. Like, there's something very like magical about like just organizing and like coexisting with people in that sense for like a very specific cause. And yeah, I think that the collective sense is like again, kind of relating back to the encampment being an opportunity for people to enact their politics and also like beyond their politics, like enact basically their sense of humanity at this point.
And I appreciate you speaking to me about this. I was wondering, because obviously this is a peaceful demonstration, can you speak a little bit about the types of activities that have gone on in and outside of the encampment that represent this? I know that also it's currently Passover right now, and I was wondering if any Jewish students were present and in practice over the last few nights.
Yeah, we had actually witnessed my first Seder yesterday. I think it was the seventh day of Passover. Seder. And it was beautiful. It was like, it was the seventh day of Passover, I think. So that was organized yesterday in the evening. Afterwards, there was this talk given around on the theme of like resistance in Gaza. There have been workshops around like protecting ourselves in regards to the possibility of the police coming, but also there have been like different types of activities like banner drawing, and like I think yesterday there was like a spot for kids, which is really cute. And what else? I feel like it's always, things are kind of continuously happening. I know that actually that tomorrow there's going to be like a sexual violence prevention workshop, which I think is really cool in terms of like keeping safety on the camp and having like strict guidelines. And oh, somebody gave like and there was film viewing last night as well. Somebody gave a talk around like a teach-in, really. Oh, actually the first teach-in that was that happened on Saturday was given by a member of PYM, Palestinian Youth Movement, around the 1968 protest against the Vietnam War in Colombia and kind of how they emerged in terms of like, well, I guess, you know, people have been considering how the protests recently are like echoes of that. Yeah, so it's kind of like diversity of like educational, artistic, ceremonies, etc.
Yeah, I think it's really striking that it's, you know, like with something that's like being in one place and being in one place together, it's so many people coming like intergenerationally from different backgrounds, like unifying under one desire and one shared desire. I wanted to talk a little bit about, because this is going to be a radio interview or, you know, aired on the radio, and something that I feel like has been at the forefront of my consciousness is like the way that like media is being surveilled, but also such a quick form of communication, and how like we're seeing things in the States, like this TikTok legislation ban going forward, and also similarly, like in with the encampment in Colombia, their community radio station was doing 24-hour coverage of the encampment, and there is footage of police trying to come and unplug their feed, and the university threatening to shut down their transmission. And so it's just, like this very illegal enactment of silencing. And I feel like there needs to be like kind of like an awareness around how, yeah, like how information is put out, and like what streams of media and how to like rely on that. And I was wondering what methods you have found have been working in terms of communicating with people involved in the encampment as well as with public.
Yeah, in terms of communicating with people from the encampment, I know that people have been relying a lot on social media to disperse information. And in terms of communicating with the public, you know, there's been like appointed like people for media and stuff like that. And yeah, I think it's really significant, like the suppression of information and the kind of battle of narrative and battle of discourse. And there's actually this guy I've been obsessed with recently. His name is Yanis Varoufakis. And he was talking about the repression in Berlin, in Germany, and how this, like, conference around Palestine was canceled, and how, like, Jewish people are getting arrested on charges of anti-Semitism, et cetera, for protesting the genocide. And he said that, like, the surreal is attempting to colonize the real, in the sense of, like, this completely fabricated narrative of anti-Semitism or of hatred or whatever is attempting to, like, to cover up, like, a very... like an act, like a, to cover up a desire for like liberation and a desire for humanity and a desire for like people to not be massacred, on the basis basically of like Western advancement and Western imperialism. I find the fact that the people in Colombia or police in Colombia are trying to suppress the radio there is like, it really shows the kind of similarities between how the Israeli state is operating in regards to murdering, you know, over 100 journalists there. It's like information and discourse and communication in media like shapes people's perceptions of the world.
Yeah, I feel like it's so important to protect storytellers and storytelling in that way. And like we have so many tools to distribute information now that people are using more and more to their advantage. I really appreciate you taking so much time to speak with me. And I was wondering if there's any other remarks that you would like or message that you would like to speak about before we kind of end this conversation.
I would say that, you know, I think that collective action generates a sense of hope and possibility and a sense that, like, you know, other worlds that are not wicked are possible and very accessible. And even just being on the camp, it feels like a bubble. It feels like a little world has been created, and then you exit it and you're like, oh, I'm on Sherbrooke Street, like this is crazy. And yeah, like hope I think can be very infectious, and I think that the amount of people that have gathered around the camp and like brought resources and brought food have like communicated that to me. Like there's this woman, she was beautiful, was like brought food, whatever, and I thanked her, and she was like thank you, like she's like, you're giving hope to people that have felt like we've been doomed. And so I guess, yeah, maybe a last word is that, like, I don't know, collective action is also like world building and yeah, that the possibilities are much more extensive than what we might think.
Left this as the closing remark of this interview, but what really happened was we kind of both broke away from passing the mic back and forth. My Zoom recorder was still going between us and we're still chatting, and you can kind of hear that we're right off the side of the encampment and people are gathered in a crowd still chanting away. And yeah, I think you can hear us both kind of more relax into talking about what the hell is going on around us. It is a little bit more difficult to hear. There's wind. It's fuzzy, but bear with me.
Is the encampment like still accepting more tents and like more people who want to get involved?
I think more people, definitely. The process has been for the moment of just like being vetted. So like if you know two people inside know you, they're like even if it's not getting infiltrated, but TBH, I feel like the most realistic understanding of it is that it probably already is infiltrated.
And the space,
well,
at this point?
Yeah, like people put them there. So yeah. Also, oh my god,
it's a huge undertaking.
Yeah, it's really huge. I like went to necessary because even now just having a lot of people in the camp, it's like
like contact with any like McGill faculty members or profs?
There's some that have come. I know there's this one prof that's camping out here. I know there's faculty camping here. And there's like this one McGill prof that I've seen that's like coming in and out a lot. One of my profs from Concordia, she's been coming like every day, which is so sweet. She gave us, well, she was like, this is not a teach-in. And then during the chat, she was like, I feel like I'm lecturing. And we were like, bro, keep talking. Like,
we're here to learn.
Exactly. Because she has experience from being at Occupy in Oakland in like 2013.
Yeah.
So she was like sharing like governance models that actually work. Because she was like, now you have 100 people. Like, when you have 500 people, like, you want this to still be able to like flow and have a structure and da da da. So, yeah, it's been helpful to talk to her.
Yeah, and I feel like that's so awesome on the intergenerational level.
Yeah.
To like listen to activist elders as well as new people coming in with new ideas.
Totally.
And like seeing how those sing into like some collective action.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, no, it's so significant. Also,
yeah.
the interaction, because one of the like ground rules is like we don't engage with like Zionists, basically. But Zionists love to engage with us, obviously. Yesterday there was this one, and I don't know if I understand this character. This blonde woman, journalist, walks in taking pictures of people. And he goes up to her and says, can you please not take pictures of people? She refuses to do so. She keeps taking pictures of people. And so I remember, like, can you please leave? Agence Quebec Presse, AQP, a law, a legal observer, looked it up. Doesn't exist except for when you go like 10 links down on Google, there's like this one LinkedIn account with this random guy that's like Agence Quebec Presse. And she's like, it's legitimate, we're based in, it's in Cambodia in Rome.
What?
And I was like, and it's called Agence Quebec Presse. Bitch, shut up. I was like, you're a motherfucking plant. Like, you're being so psychotic. And then
and you're causing a scene.
And you're causing a scene, yeah. And then earlier today, there were like these really horrible, these two men, really irky men, like on the other side of the fence. Like, I think they were, I wasn't present, but people told me that they were speaking with these, like, these Muslim students and, like, saying really, like, I think calling them terrorists, like, they were super racist shit. And people, like, started, like, chanting at them, and it caused like a whole thing. They're just trying really, really hard to.
But it's great to be like in strength in numbers, you
exactly.
know? Like,
yeah.
Because it seems like these people that are trying to antagonize are one or two.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, no, it's not that huge.
How embarrassing.
So humiliating. I'm like, you are so disconnected from the world. Like, the surreal has penetrated their brains, and that's what they're running off of.
Well, that's the thing, you know, like, in talking about, like, media stuff, it's like, it really comes down to, like, what channel are you tuned into?
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's so, when someone's locked into a channel, like, it's so hard to derail
yeah.
and re-rail
yeah.
onto another one.
No, exactly.
Know?
But it's really terrifying to see how, like, just, like, the effects of just absolute brainwashed people have.
Yeah.
Brains.
And just, like, obscene levels of sensitivity.
Completely.
You know?
I'm, like, dehumanization. I'm, like, to witness it, and, like, holding and be like, oh, like, they deserve it, or whatever the fuck. I'm, like, you have dehumanized yourself.
Yeah. Like, you have completely disconnected yourself from any type of...
It is Wednesday, April 10th, 2024, and you are listening to If You Got Ears on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your guest host today, Stefan Christoph. I am going to be doing a feature broadcast of music released by an excellent small cassette label called Constellation Tatsu. This label I've really enjoyed for a number of years. They are diverse in their sounds, releasing ambient music that is both filled by organic instruments, electronic music, drone music, more deep on the experimental side, and also artists from around the world. This is obviously a passion project of love for creativity and creative music, and it's beautiful. I really appreciate a lot of what they do, and I wanted to feature some of their recent releases. So I'm going to do that today here on CKUT in Montreal. You can find more info about the Constellation Tatsu project at ctatsu.bandcamp.com. I'm going to be featuring a bunch of tracks from new releases on the label. You will hear from Andy Aquarius, a project called Glow Phase, Randall Fisher and Dexter Story, Tarot Plane, and Ixri. Check out their work. Some of this is totally new music for me. I am a little bit familiar with Andy Aquarius, and I look forward to sharing a concert with him in Berlin at some point this year. This is If